Hello, and welcome to show number 2419 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
The third surgeon, when he told me it didn't take, I just felt like he was almost like writing me off. And it just really ticked me off. And I just, you know, I left that doctor's appointment, you know, realizing that, yeah, my life is going to have to change. You know, when you walk out of the appointment, it's like, can I still drive legally? Can I do this? Can I do that? Work, I'm like, yeah, I can work. I can still find my way around the gym. I can still train people, but I can work with this. And, you know, I remember going back to work and my boss was real concerned if I had any accommodations I needed. And I said, no, I got this. I'm good. I'm going to be the same guy as I was before this eye thing happened. So that's the way it's been.
We titled the show, When Life Gives You Lemons, Make Pottery. And soon you'll find out why.
With the right attitude, life's unexpected adversities can sometimes open up new doors and opportunities. We'll talk with Tim Clark, who suddenly lost virtually all of the sight in one eye while at work one day. During his recovery, he discovered the joy of pottery, and he now creates tactile works of art that can be enjoyed by everybody. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Tim Clark.
I think even before becoming half blind, I try to live my life fearlessly. You know, even like with the artwork, you know, I just apply to put your artwork in every gallery you can think of, pound on doors and make people tell you no. I mean, don't be a pest, but you know, if you don't pound on that door, if you don't ask, you're never gonna get where you want to go. So just pound on doors and make them tell you no.
Well, and then don't take no for an answer.
There's that too. Very true.
It is always best to be our own advocates.
Yes, for sure.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Tim.
My name is Tim Clark. December 15th of 2020, I had a detachment of the retina in my left eye. I've had four surgeries that could not correct it. So I officially am living with monocular vision, you'd say.
So previous to your detached retina, you didn't experience any issues with your eyes, I take it?
Nothing. And it was, I had no idea you could have a detached retina that was just spontaneous out of the blue. I guess I was just always under the assumption that it took a, you know, some sort of blunt force trauma to the head to cause a detached retina. It happened while I was at work. I was editing some video for kind of a side project at work. And, you know, regular field of vision, you know, before, you know, you kind of see fuzzies floating around in your eyes a little bit. Just if you concentrate, you can see them, and they suddenly kind of turn darker and thicker, and didn't think much of it. And kind of next time I paid attention to the vision in my left eye, it was like black sand was floating in my eye. Maybe 34 minutes later, it looked like I was looking through a fog over a mirror. And that's when I called an eye doctor and got an emergency appointment the next day. I woke up the next morning, and the field of vision in my left eye was pitch black. I couldn't see anything. And so that suddenly, as you can imagine, a little anxious and a little bit of panic. He told me when it tore, it had hemorrhaged, and the inside of my eyeball was actually full of blood. That's why I couldn't see anything at all.
Wow. So even though you got on the problem pretty quickly and went to a doctor, they were unable to rectify the situation.
Well, yeah, kind of. So this was, you know, deep in the throes of COVID. By the time I went to the eye doctor and we got it diagnosed, and the time that I had my first surgery was about 13 days, you know, just because of trying to get an OR room that was free. And, you know, for whatever reason, just, you know, the world's upside down at that point. If we'd have gotten it done sooner, would it be a different outcome? I don't know. I try not to live and dwell on that. I think it'd just make me bitter if I did. It just kind of, you know, is what it is.
And what were you doing professionally or otherwise at the time?
So I work as a gym manager for a employee gym that's attached to a hospital in Fresno, California, Community Health Systems. I'm on the CRMC campus, which is a the only level one trauma center between LA and San Francisco here in California, in the Central Valley. And they have an employee gym. It's about a 6,000 square foot gym. And being that we were closed down for COVID, right? We didn't really have any people working out in the gym. So we had been making exercise videos to just kind of broadcast internally for our employees to try to do something to keep them going and service our folks during COVID when the gym wasn't open.
So I take it you're one of these people who's in pretty good shape.
Depends on who you ask. yeah, I tend to be pretty good shape. Former college athlete, worked as a firefighter for 10 years. Yeah, done multiple sports, raced bicycles for Fresno State cycling team in college. After I was done racing bicycles, I spent 10 years rock climbing all over the state of California. So stayed pretty active. I guess so. I'm 56 now, between 11 years racing bicycles, 10 years rock climbing, and 10 years as a firefighter. That's, you know, 31 years of my life has been spent pretty physically active. So yeah, you could say that.
Sounds like fun.
Eyes on Success connects corporate sponsors with visually impaired listeners around the world.
More information about becoming a sponsor can be found at www.sponsor.eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is how Tim Clark learned to make pottery after suddenly losing virtually all his vision in one eye, and how he makes a point of making art accessible to other people with vision loss.
Well, Tim, in the introduction, you told us how you suddenly lost all of your vision in one eye, and that was kind of a surprise. And I take it the vision in your other eye is okay, but apparently that made some changes in your life and led you to some new pastimes.
Yeah, it sure did. So, you know, growing up, I've always kind of been a creative kid, the kid that was doodling in the margins of books and stuff in class, and never really had any formal education in art other than, you know, maybe a couple of summer classes or something as a little kid. But so the recovery from the surgery, a retina surgery, they inject a gas or a medical grade oil in your eye, and that bubble pins the retina to the back of the eyeball, and they kind of laser etch the back of the eyeball to create some scar tissue, and they adhere together. And so for 4 weeks, you got to position your head so that bubble is pinning that retina to your eye, the inside of your eye. So for 4 weeks, I laid face down 24/7, except for, you know, 10-minute breaks to go pee or eat or shower or whatever. So being a very active guy, you could imagine it pretty much drove me crazy. But during that time period, I started to just watch videos on YouTube, and I got turned on to watching videos of people throwing clay and pots on a wheel. And I found it very relaxing and meditative. And I just kind of, for a couple of weeks watching that, I just decided, you know, when things open up from COVID, I'm going to take the first class I can. And that's what I did.
So if you were lying on your stomach with your face down, how were you able to watch anything? I'm trying to imagine the geometry of this situation.
That's a good question. So being in the fitness industry, you know, I have a lot of friends that are, you know, yoga instructors, spin instructors, massage therapists. And there was a gal I knew that was a massage therapist, and being right in the middle of COVID, she wasn't doing any massage stuff. And I actually had reached out to her to see, you know, where I could go to rent a massage table so I could lay face down with my head in the donut and be pretty well supported. And she just loaned me her table for that 4 week recovery period. So my laptop was on the floor underneath the massage table, you know, flattened out as open as it could be. So the screen was right underneath the donut. And as long as I didn't fall asleep and drool on it, I was good to go.
Well, that was a very clever solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a great YouTube video itself.
How to survive retina surgery recovery. There you go.
So did you naturally gravitate towards watching videos on pottery, or you just watched a bunch of videos and these just somehow captivated you?
You know, it was one of those times where it's like, you know, I've about done watching Netflix, you know, kind of thing. You can only watch so much of that before going nuts. It was just something a little different. And I couldn't even tell you how it got in my algorithm. But you know, once you watch a couple, they just kind of keep coming and didn't really have to go looking for them. They just kept popping up on YouTube for me. So just kind of, I don't know, happenstance or luck or karma, whatever you want to call it, I guess.
It's amazing what people can learn on YouTube these days. You can learn about just about anything you want.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Obviously, watching YouTube, you can only learn so much. So once things opened up over COVID, I signed up for a class. It was a 6-week class, meeting, you know, 2 hours a day for like 6 weeks or something like that. And I took 4 weeks of that class, and I had to have, I think it was my third surgery. So I missed the final two classes of that 6-week series. So during the recovery of that retina surgery, you know, kind of started shopping online for pottery wheels and bought myself a pottery wheel, put it in the garage. And from the knowledge I gleaned from YouTube in that 4-week class, I kind of started to become self-taught. I kind of got myself to a point where I could throw some things, make coffee cups, whatever. They're kind of rudimentary. And if I look back at pictures of them, kind of cringeworthy now compared to where I'm at 3 years later. And I've taken a couple classes to kind of refine my skill since then. And that's kind of where it started.
So pottery is intrinsically very tactile, as is the process of making it. But for anybody who's never seen a pottery wheel, can you describe how that works?
Yeah. So it's fairly, well, it could be either a standing wheel or a wheel on the ground, or, you know, low down, like a small desk or something. Sit on a stool. You have a kind of like an accelerator pedal that controls the speed of the wheel. Because you do want variable speed for whatever you're trying to do on the wheel. The head of the wheel, probably 12 inches in diameter or so. And there's a tray that fits around the wheel that catches the slop and the water and the clay that comes off of whatever you're throwing. Try to keep it contained. It still makes quite a mess. It's not a neat and tidy hobby. It's pretty messy art.
So what exactly happens? I've never seen anybody do this start to finish. Do you just start out with a big glob of clay and water, or do you have whatever you're going to make partially form before you start spinning it?
No. You do have a lump of clay. And the size of the lump of clay depends on, you know, how big of a vase or a plate or a cup or whatever you're trying to make is. So, you know, I don't know, anywhere from 1.5 pounds to 5 or 6 pounds, you know, you throw up to 10 for a really big pot or something like that. But yeah, you just throw it right down in the middle of the wheel. The hardest part one of the hardest parts with pottery on a wheel is actually centering the clay. If it's not completely centered and is, you know, kind of cattywampus, makes it a lot more difficult. It's hard to throw a nice cylinder that's straight, has even thickness and walls. It can be pretty tricky. Once you get it centered, it gets a lot easier. It's kind of funny. With a friend of mine, who's another potter, we did a blind challenge to see if we could throw a blindfolded. And we did it to raise money for a charity called the Fun Eye Fund that provides prosthetic eyes for those folks that, you know, may want a prosthetic eye, but insurance may not cover it because it's considered cosmetic or whatever. So the pots we made, the finished product, we auctioned them off online on Instagram. But it's interesting. I found doing that blindfold that I'm actually better centering the lump of clay blindfolded than I am with my good eye open. So since we did that challenge, I now center totally blind. So it's interesting.
Are there marks on the platen to help you center the clay?
Yeah, they're concentric rings that help a little bit. You'd be amazed though, just slightly off center really causes a pretty good wobble. Even something, you know, like as small as a 16th of an inch off center, you'll feel it. And it'll be a fight when that far off.
So you just said if it's off center, you'll feel it. Do you do most of your throwing tactilely or trying to get benefit from using your good eye?
Both. I think until we did that blindfold challenge, I didn't realize how much I did tactfully. And with that blindfold challenge, we did it start to finish totally blindfolded. So we pulled the walls and created a cylinder blindfolded. Once you get your raw vessel in its initial form, once you dry it out a little bit, so it's called what we call leather hard, you can use a tool to refine it and shape it. And that's kind of where the beauty really comes out in a vase or something like that. We trimmed it with tools, blindfolded. We glazed them blindfolded, everything, start to finish blindfolded. So it really was tactile on that end. And, you know, some of the tools we use, you have a metal edge to them, and it's not as sharp as a knife or anything like that. But, you know, you think about, man, me trimming something that's spinning on a wheel at, I don't know, a couple hundred RPMs at the most, and blindfolded with a metal tool in my hand may not be the smartest thing to do. But yeah, it was a good learning experience and how much you can really do tactile versus sighted.
So you mentioned doing the glaze. That's kind of like the stuff you paint on the outside before you fire the object that you've just created. How do you work with glazing materials and know what color is going where and everything?
That's a good question. And it really is. It's, yeah, it's just like paint. You brush it on. Yeah, I mean, you can dip it too, but we did brushed on glazes. And going into it with the blind challenge, I chose glazes that have some what's called flux in them. And the flux causes the glaze to kind of run and blend together. So I kind of went into glazing the coffee cup I made with the mentality of making it, you know, pretty abstract and the colors blending together. And it turned out pretty good.
When you opened your eyes, you were pleased with the results, I take it.
It's funny when you're glazing, you know, before the glazes kind of run and blend together, it looks pretty bad. So you never know. The joke is when you put something in a kiln for a glaze fire is you're kind of praying that the kiln gods treat you kindly. And with that one, they did. Yeah, it's glaze is basically a solution of glass particles that are colored and suspended in water. And so when you put it through a glaze fire and you apply heat to it, you're actually kind of melting that glass, and it kind of melts together. And depending on the chemical makeup, the certain glazes you put together and the amount of heat you apply to it or the amount of time it's exposed to that heat can vary how it looks on the back end when it's finished.
I always thought pottery was basically a lot of what you did with your hands and then painting the glaze on. But it sounds like there are a lot of other aspects that one can delve into in understanding what goes on and how to make the piece come out right.
Very much so. Yeah. It's funny when you go to sell pottery and people kind of balk at the price, you know, a coffee cup for 35 or 40 bucks, or they can go to Walmart and buy one for 5 to 10. And they don't realize the labor involved, you know, with just, you know, taking the clay from that raw form, throwing it on the wheel, trimming it. Once it's dry, you got to get all the water out of it before the glaze fire. So you put it through a bisque kiln, which is another firing process, but not as hot as a glaze fire. So you're evaporating all the moisture off that pot. One, because it helps the glaze stick a little better to the vessel. And two, if you don't get as much water off as you can, if there's any air pockets that have some water in them, and you seal it with glaze, that water isn't anywhere to go. So if you heat it, it vaporizes and expands. It can actually explode and ruin whatever piece you got in the kiln. So there's a lot of little steps in it. And I learned very early on that whatever you're making, don't get married to it, because it can go catastrophically sideways very quickly in each one of these steps. Which is a real heartbreaker in the beginning, and it still kind of is now, as long as I've been around. But you get to the point where the more things you make and the more you make friends with this don't get married to it attitude, when something does go awry, it's like, I can make another one.
So we've been talking about thrown pottery that's got a cylindrical symmetry to it, you know, plates, bowls, cups, vases. But a lot of the work you do is flat. What are the differences in doing that versus doing something on a pottery wheel?
The stuff I've been doing lately, creating the bigger pieces of work with carved tiles, has been kind of new for me. And it's still kind of a learning process for me right now. It's a totally different aspect of ceramics and a little bit different skill set, to be honest. Still involves a lot of steps. So initially, you know, creating the tiles, and You can vary the thickness, of course, of the tiles. And I usually just use like a rolling pin to roll out the clay to a consistent thickness. And I've gone down to Home Depot and bought some square dowels of different thicknesses so I can vary the thickness of my tiles. And if I make a thicker tile, it gives me more depth to carve into than a, you know, thinner tile. And the trick with tiles too is in flat stuff like that is there's a chance for things to warp on you as they dry, to crack as they dry. So it's a whole different set of issues and ways to troubleshoot. So it's been a pretty good learning experience. And it's one of those things that's just overall, it's made me a better, you know, potter and ceramic artist. I've just become more, I guess, diversified, you could say.
And then you're making a point specifically of making this type of pottery tactile so that people with little or no vision can appreciate it as much as somebody fully sighted, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I was actually listening to another podcast, and that day they were talking about how folks that are blind or have limited vision can still use social media and Instagram. And at that point, my ears kind of perked up. And as I'm creating artwork that's usually taken in visually, it just hit me. It's like, why can't I do this to somehow make art, you know, so it can be consumed by someone who's blind or impaired vision? And so I really kind of feverishly started practicing, you know, the carving and experimenting with that. And so now my goal is to create art that can kind of bring those two populations together, you know, glazing with, you know, brilliant, bright colors and interesting patterns that can be seen. And then also create something that has a lot of variation in texture and depth combined so that someone can run their hands across it and feel it and experience art that way as well. And just kind of bring the two populations together to enjoy that.
And I take it you are selling your works these days at art fairs and local communities?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of that. Doing the bigger pieces takes a lot of time. So my production on making functional pottery like cups and plates and bowls is slowed down a bit. I am trying to figure out a balance between the two and try to get in on some makers markets here locally in the fall I can participate in. I got invited to a couple over the wintertime and the spring, and I just didn't have the inventory of functional stuff to partake in that. So the goal is to try to find a happy medium for that. And at the same time, there's a gallery here locally that the director of the gallery saw one of the pieces I made that's actually hanging in a gallery in Fresno, California right now, Scarab Gallery. She saw that and she's encouraged me to try to expand that. And she wants to have an installation in her gallery that is an installation that can be totally tactile for everyone.
Well, what a great hobby that was a result of a rather adverse event in your life.
Yeah, you're kind of hitting on something. I had a conversation with someone a few weeks ago, and this gal asked me if I had gotten to the point where I have embraced my monocular vision. And I was thinking about that, you know, because at first you're kind of bitter and you're kind of why me kind of attitude about it. You know, I was just sitting at work, minding my own business, what happened. There's no reason it happened. And something like this that gives purpose to it, I don't think I'm in the headspace where I necessarily embrace the monocular vision, but I've taken the stance that, okay, if this is what I'm living with the rest of my life, I don't think it was an accident that this happened to me. I'm going to use this and I'm going to leverage this to help somebody else out. And that's kind of where I'm going with the art.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about and see examples of Tim Clark's pottery, resources for people with monocular vision, and how to contact Tim Clark.
Well, Tim, if people had questions for you, wanted to contact you, find out more about your work, or even buy some, what would you tell them?
They can check me out on Instagram, the Half Blind Potter on Instagram. And my Instagram page is completely documented my pottery journey from start to finish. So if you want some good laughs, you can scroll back way back to the beginning and see the cringy stuff. You'll see some mistakes and some carnage on my page as well. And then we're currently working on a formal web page that will be halfblindpotterycompany.com.
So if somebody had a question for you, could they reach you?
Yeah, you totally could. Feel free through the Instagram page. I'm more than happy to answer any questions. And like I said, hopefully when we get that web page up, we'll be able to answer questions through there too and take inquiries and commission work and that kind of stuff as well.
When one is newly blind at a later age, it is often hard to find the resources that one needs to learn how to deal with their new situation. That had to be difficult for you.
Yeah. You know, it's just a lot of those things that no one tells you about. There didn't seem to be any one place online to learn all these things. Yeah, it was really frustrating at first. I did get connected with a support group online called iHesive. That's for, you know, folks with monocular vision. And that's been just a blessing and a godsend too. Not just to find resources, but to, you know, I've got a good family connection here and a good support network. My wife is awesome. And not to take anything away from them, but no matter how good they are, they've not walked the walk and don't know exactly what you're living with or going through. And that online group, that iHesive group, that support network was huge for my mental well-being and just meeting other people online that have done what I've done and, you know, kind of worked through that.
What's the web address for the iHesive online group?
EYEHESIVE.com.
Although we did not capture this in the recording, Tim did provide his email address, which is thehalfblindpotter@gmail.com.
And if you missed any of that information in the audio portion of the show, you can always click on the show notes associated with this episode, which is episode 2419, at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about how Fable provides services that can help improve accessibility. Fable was formed to assist large enterprises in improving digital accessibility for people with various disabilities. They do this by hiring disabled community members to test and provide feedback on websites, applications, and products. We'll talk with Shane Kehoe and Lynette Frieson from Fable about the company and how you can participate.
So if you're looking for something you can do at home, earn a little money, working at your own schedule, you might be interested in joining us next week. Catch you then.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.